scores! Gilmore scores! The ball three left.
Off the glass, it left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
All right, happy Wednesday. Let's get this hour of Flames Talk going on this Wednesday, August 14th, with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Save 40% on a Halo Smart Lock and start unlocking your house right from your phone. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcasts on this Wednesday. Hello, Vic. Happy Wednesday, buddy.
Happy Wednesday to you too, pal.
We've got a busy hour ahead for you. 960-960. Text line's open if you want to jump in and be a part of the conversation if you're listening live. You know, as we are very much into the summer, in fact, as we're getting towards the end of the summer and with training camps and the 24-25 season approaching here, it's been a pretty quiet summer, all things considered, for the Calgary Flames, hey? I mean, not completely void of news, not completely sleepy. You know, Jacob Markstrom did get traded. That was a pretty significant trade. When did Markstrom get dealt? Was that before the draft?
Oh, man. You're making me go way back now.
When did that happen?
That was pre-draft.
Was it pre-draft?
Yeah.
Was it? I honestly don't remember. But he did. He's no longer a member of the
Mange Flames. At the draft.
Mange was at the draft. Remember, you and I were recording an episode of the Flames TV podcast with Dietz and Parks. And then all of a sudden, the Mangiapane trade happened. We're like, well, I guess we need to stop doing this, and this won't ever see the light of day.
Jacob Markstrom, June 19th, one week before the draft.
Okay, so 1 week before the draft. So Markstrom's been traded, Mangiapane's been traded, a couple of free agent signings. Like, it's not been a completely irrelevant or fully quiet summer, but compared to the last two summers, summer of 2022 with Johnny saying goodbye and the blockbuster trade and the Jonathan Huberdeau contract that set the new bar for the Flames and then signing Nazem Kadri, the Monahan trade. I mean, what didn't happen in the summer of 2022? A year later, you've got a general manager who steps away and a head coach who gets fired and then a hiring of a new head coach and a new general manager plus arena news. Like, that was a very busy summer of 2023. I don't think the summer of 2024 measures up anywhere near in terms of craziness and franchise-altering decisions quite like the prior two summers.
Not quite as volatile, and we even can throw in Tyler Toffoli being traded, speculation around five other pending unrestricted free agents, and granted, they all didn't move over the course of the summer, but that was a long, winding narrative through the summer. Michael Backlund signs, you get into the season, the remaining ones, it's a focal point. There is nothing wrong with a quiet summer 2024 for the Calgary Flames and Craig Conroy, just given everything we've seen over the 720 days prior, the chaos that was the Calgary Flames for a couple of summers.
Yeah, and I think that this is very much by design if you're the Flames.
Thank you.
Craig Conroy has even hinted at that. Remember when he sat down with us at the end of the year and the season was done, it was locker cleanout day, and he sat down with us and chatted with us, and he's like, I'm just, he said it at the on deadline day, and he said it at the end of the season as well. So I'm just happy that it's all over now, because from stepping on the job, he had a head coach to hire, then he had all of these fires to put out with Lindholm and Backlund and
Zadorov, just Hanifin, Tanev.
On and on about guys who probably weren't going to be coming back, and trade Toffoli. So he had nothing but hard work on his plate right from the get-go. So yeah, it's Elliot Friedman on the latest 32 Thoughts, an emergency edition of 32 Thoughts dropped for half an hour on Wednesday. And this, the nugget from Elliot on the Flames and their quiet summer.
You know, one of the things I have heard about the Flames is that they have basically told all their guys nothing's coming this summer. That last year was too noisy. This year it's been a lot quieter. They like it that way, and they want to see how things are going to play out. So I wouldn't expect Calgary to be... I mean, look, anything can happen. You make them an offer, you can't refuse. They have to consider it. But I have heard that Calgary's plan is we're enjoying our quiet summer, and we'd like to keep it that way.
So that lots on the Oilers offer sheet situation, Austin Matthews is captain, Tampa Bay Lightning sale, Predators trade, all of that on the latest 32 Thoughts with Freege, available wherever you get your podcast. It dropped on Wednesday. But a quiet summer is exactly what they needed, especially as they're now starting a process of changing the team. And whether you are on board with them retooling as opposed to rebuilding, whether or not you think they should be burning it down more or not at all, whatever the case is, or whatever you want them to do, fact is you can't deny they are doing things differently than they've done for the last decade. They have started down a different path. They have pivoted the immediate goals of the organization. And so in the first, like, this is really going into the first season of Craig Conroy's vision, because last year was the first year of Connie on the job, but he had so much stuff to clean off his plate. He had so much housekeeping to do that he could only really start to put the very beginning touches on what his vision is. This is now the first year that he really gets to put that into place. So a quiet summer is probably exactly what they needed.
Well, I mean, some time at the lake or the cabin is certainly warranted after what he stepped into last year.
I don't even mean just that. Like no franchise-altering decisions.
No, that's why you put your feet up a little bit.
Exactly. Jacob Markstrom was a big trade, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't franchise-altering the way Daryl Sutter or Brad Treliving leaving the organization was, or the Huberdeau Tkachuk trade, or Johnny Gaudreau walk. Like, those were franchise-altering things. The Markstrom trade was big, but not of the same caliber or impact.
And nor is the quantity of, as you mentioned, stepping onto the job and having to sort out the mess that was the pending unrestricted free agents. And to your point of, okay, well now, and don't get me wrong, Conroy's not sitting there not doing it. He's not at the lake. The feet's not up. There's not a rum and coke in hand. Because
we're going to talk about the Hlinka Gretzky Cup.
He was there.
He was there for pretty much the entire tournament. So
yep.
Yeah, there's
so there's some scouting things going on. But yes, now that he's unloaded the unrestricted free agents, he's got some assets back. He's used some of those assets at the draft. He's got ample cap space. This is where kind of step two, I would say, of the vision of what he's trying to do will come through. Step one is kind of like a mini half step where it's, all right, get rid of all these players that are pending unrestricted free agents, get your assets. That is the asset gathering portion of phase one. Phase two is, okay, what do you want this team to look like? What are the characteristics? What do you still have left? So yes, this is, you can measure and gauge success to a certain degree, if you will, in what Craig Conroy was able to do in season one, but that's not what's going to define the Calgary Flames for the 5 years, 10 years moving forward. The vision that Craig Conroy employs from here on out, that's going to be the measure. And that's, well, things aren't necessarily, it's almost like a duck on a pond right now. You're seeing it, it's really calm. There's still going to be some paddling going on underneath. And that's the sort of vision establishing move or criteria or segment that Craig Conroy's in.
Well,
now.
And you're at a spot right now where the plan is pretty set, accumulating future assets, trying to get younger, trying to build a new core with this group and get yourself back to competitiveness in the next 3, 4, 5 years here. And so I think having more of those franchise altering things getting slapping you across the face, like they need a summer that was a little bit more settled. They need
stability.
And even though most people are projecting the Flames to be a bottom 10, bottom 5 team next year, at the very least, there's a pretty good idea as to what this group is going to look like here for the next little while. And there are still, as Freege said in that clip we played, I mean, never say never. Somebody gives him the old offer, make him an offer you can't refuse, and
I don't know what that's called, but yeah.
Vito Corleone.
Thank you.
Yeah, then obviously stuff could still happen. But honestly, this has been a really nice summer in that regard for the Flames. It would not surprise me. In fact, I think there's a... It would surprise me if the agents for Broberg and Holloway didn't approach the Flames and other teams outside of the Blues and trying to get this done, because that's exactly what they were doing. They were going around shopping this idea to other teams to try to get some traction and try to get a deal done, either to force the hands of the Oilers or get their clients. There are two separate agents for Holloway and Broberg, but I don't think it was a coincidence that the Blues did them both. I don't think the agents were, they offer sheeted your guy too. Like, of course they were working in
on the same day, at the same time, the same announcement. Who would have thought it?
So wouldn't shock you if it was Calgary or all the other teams with cap room, the Broberg and Holloway camps absolutely would have at the very least broached the subject with probably 5, 7, 10 other teams in trying to offer sheet it. But you know, a lot of people on the text line have said, well, why didn't the Flames do the exact same thing? Well, honestly, because of exactly what we're talking about, that I think they'd like to have themselves more of a settled summer as opposed to upheaving their assets and putting themselves back in the news cycle again. Like, give everybody a break for a little while. I don't think that there's anything wrong with that.
This has got to be refreshing from a player standpoint as well. If you're a member of the Calgary Flames, if you're going to be one of the 22 or 23 skaters that is on the opening night roster, having gone through a summer where you're not sitting, you know, in the group chat going, what's next? What's next? What's the next bombshell to go, or who's the next guy to go? That's got to be nice and calm and refreshing from that perspective as well, where you don't have to deal with any of the extracurriculars. You don't have to deal with the speculation or the rumors. You don't have to deal with media asking you at various events, hey, what's going on here? What's going on there? You can just unwind a little bit, then get right back to it and focus only on what you need to do to get yourself ready for the season, as opposed to having to listen to everybody talk about your team going, what are they going to do next? Or how are they going to fix this? Or so on and so forth.
Now, all that being said, what could still change that for the Flames between now and the start of the season? Is there anything that you could point to? And I'll bounce a few off you here. But is there anything that could happen between now, August 14th, and 2 months from now-ish when the regular season starts? Is there anything that is realistic that could still happen of the kind of high-impact variety? So let me bounce a few of the things that were kicking around my head that could, like, do you think someone would approach or could approach the Flames on Kadri between now and the start of the regular season? Because I don't think there's any way the Flames are going around shopping Kadri. I don't think Craig Conroy is saying, hey, do you want Nazem Kadri? I think that he's far too important for what they're trying to do, and they would like him to be one of the driving forces, one of the leaders inside that room, and rightfully so. But if a team comes to them and is like, hey, we're willing to give you a significant offer or a significant price to pay for a guy like Kadri, is that something that strikes you as realistic or no?
Honestly, as it stands right now, probably not. And not that Kadri wouldn't be coveted, but the teams that would be coveting him aren't necessarily in the best cap situations as it stands right now. Because if I'm playing Craig Conroy and another team comes to me, hey, we want Kadri, that's great, you're going to have to pay for him, but I'm also not interested in retaining any salary along the way. So once you get into that situation, you're looking, okay, well, what teams could just absorb Nazem Kadri that might make sense? Okay, well, you can look at somebody like the Carolina Hurricanes, who have 8.275. But are you going to burn $7 million of that to make a move like this? Or Utah wants to make a splash, but they've only got 9.9. So suddenly you're looking at a situation where, well, if you're going to knock my socks off with an offer, that offer is going to come with me not retaining any salary to make it happen. Now, is there a shorter term contract that I would absorb if I'm Craig Conroy? Potentially. But I feel like a lot of things are settled right now as we get into mid-August, where teams are pretty content with what they have moving into the regular season, whether it be, all right, they're completely established, or we're in kind of that lull right now where maybe you're looking within your prospect pool and going, okay, well, we want to give a prospect X or prospect Y a shot, an opportunity to make this team, and maybe an acquisition will hinder or block that a little bit more than you'd like. I don't know if mid-August is blockbuster time right now if you're talking about a player like Nazem Kadri.
I could see that all of a sudden becoming a thing if somebody gets hurt in training camp, somebody gets hurt, a center iceman goes down in the preseason, and we're without player X for the next 4 months. Like, okay, that's maybe more of an area where maybe, hey, this after the season he just had, like we'd be really interested in a guy like Kadri. But you're right, mid-August and going into the start of the season doesn't really seem like the time. Because I think you could point to Boston, you could point to Dallas, you could point to some other teams.
You could point to teams for sure.
Carolina that you mentioned. Like, you could point to teams and say there'd be a fit there, but I don't think the Flames are shopping them, and nor do I think they should be. I'm a big proponent of Kadri being part of the solution, and if he's down to be a part of the solution, then I think that's a great guy to have as part of it. But again, as Fried said in that clip, if somebody comes to you and says, hey, you know, we'd really like this player, I think you got to listen. And there's really, from a veteran standpoint, at this point, there's no untouchables if you're the Flames with the way they're going.
No, when you're in a rebuild or a retool and another team comes to you and says, we covet this player and we're willing to talk to you about the acquisition costs, and you dictate, if you're Craig Conroy, you kind of dictate the acquisition cost, because again, you're in no rush, no hurry, especially a player like Nazem Kadri. Might be different if we're talking Kuzmenko. We're not necessarily going to see it on Mantha because he was just signed, so it's not like he's going to move in August after signing in July. That's not necessarily the scenario that plays out. The only thing that I could see in that sense, and again, I think it'd be noisy for 24 to 48 hours. The trade gets done, it blindsides everybody, then everything quiets down again, and you go. Now, the only thing, and I'm not suggesting that this is going to happen with any individual, but if there's a veteran player on the Flames that decides on the lowdown, yeah, you know what? I know I said I was game for this, but if the right team came along with the right fit and the right return, please do me a solid and move me. But even then, we're talking about being in mid-August now, and there have been no whispers, no inkling, no nothing to suggest that. That's a quick 24 to 48-hour news cycle thing, and then everything hushes back down again as well.
I think the same is true with a guy like Rasmus Anderson, who's got 2 years left. Like, I don't think if you're the Flames right now, you're actively looking to move this guy. But if somebody comes to you and says, hey, we really think that Anderson would be a massive addition to our blue line, we're willing to pay a significant price here, well, then, yeah, I think you got to go talk to Raz and say, hey, you know, what are you feeling? Is signing long-term in Calgary what you want to do? Or would you be open to a trade to Team X or Team Y? But again, I don't think you're actively, maybe next summer.
You're not doing that due diligence right now.
No, I think that starts next summer.
Right.
When you start to move into him being eligible for a contract extension. Well, then maybe you start to gauge his interest level in coming back, and you start to wonder if maybe, much like Hanifin and Tanev and the guys that they just dealt, well, you're still a year down the road, so I don't think you're eagerly trying to move that guy. You mentioned Kuzmenko. I do think he's a wild card this season, and I do think there is a large chance that we do see him moved at some point. I just don't know if it's a summer move. I think you want to keep pumping that value, and you want to see if you can get more teams interested in what Kuzmenko could bring to the table before you move him elsewhere.
In terms of just pure production, he was a top 10 player in the NHL. I think the date was after March 1. After he got settled, after he came back from injury, after he dealt with some issues, he found that chemistry with Nazem Kadri. He found that chemistry with Jonathan Huberdeau on the power play, and he absolutely lit up the last month and a bit of the season. Mm-hmm. But if I'm another team, that's not enough of a sample size to make me dismiss everything I saw from him from opening night with the Vancouver Canucks till February 28th in terms of that sample size, where there was a reason after scoring, 39 goals as a air quotes rookie with the Vancouver Canucks, that he was suddenly available to the Calgary Flames as a cap dump in an Elias Lindholm deal. Now, it just so happens that looks pretty good right now in terms of taking on a contract back, boosting its value for the potential to, okay, he doesn't necessarily fit the age range. He's certainly going to have the opportunity to explore things in unrestricted free agency if he continues, especially if he continues to light it up the way he did. That's a perfect project for Craig Conroy and the Calgary Flames to absorb someone whose stock was low and help boost it and then acquire even more assets. They got five pieces for Elias Lindholm.
Yep.
You flip Kuzmenko out of that and get two or three more. That is nuts in terms of asset management.
Yep. Few texts, 960-960 on, you know, what could happen, what might change this being a quiet summer for the Flames. I honestly don't think there is much that's going to happen. I don't think there should be anything. From what they have done with moving two players that made sense to move, Andrew Mangiapane and Jacob Markstrom, and then you go through the draft, you go through free agency, lots of good stuff done. Now's a good time to just settle and see what you got and see what young players pop and compete for jobs in training camp and see what your veterans are all about, see what type of atmosphere and culture can be created. Like, these are things that you want to start building. So I don't think you need any more upheaval from what has happened over the last 2-3 summers. So, but somebody suggests a Tanner Jeannot style offer for Blake Coleman or something. That comes from Tyler in Southwood. I think that Blake Coleman could be a guy that gets ridiculous interest on the trade market if that becomes part of the conversation. Now, Blake Coleman chose Calgary to start a family. He decided to put roots down here when he signed in the summer of 2021. He's got 3 years left on his deal, including this coming season. I don't know if he's a candidate right now to move out down the road, sure. But at the same time, Blake Coleman's a two-time Stanley Cup winner and a guy who is very much wired to compete to win hockey games. Would it be the most surprising thing if at some point it's like, you know, I'm 32 years old, I've got two
clocks
years.
Ticking.
Exactly. Like, if that happens, then yeah, you entertain it, and I think that they'd get a massive return for him. But again, if you get an offer you can't refuse on any veteran player right now, I think that you have to consider it and be willing to potentially pull the trigger. This says, is it ever made public if a player received an offer sheet but doesn't sign it? Wouldn't surprise me if the Oiler guys received offer sheets from the Flames but didn't sign them. To my knowledge, that did not happen. There were no offer sheets tendered by the Flames from what I understand. But I don't think it would be out of the question that other teams might have. And they just chose the Blues and chose to... No, that stuff doesn't ever come out. If they sign the offer sheet, it does. But if there were other... just like, you know, a lot of times if there's guys get 20 contract offers,
July
usually
1.
Only hear about the one that gets signed, right?
Right. Yeah, that's not... You don't usually hear too much information on players not interested in signing contracts with certain teams that have been tendered.
This says, does Coleman have any no-trade or modified trade protection? He has a modified no-trade list or a modified no-trade clause over the next 3 years. He's got a list of 10 teams that he will be traded to. So that would mean 22 teams on his 21. No-trade. 21. Well,
sorry.
Fair point. 21.
No, that is semantics
no
Vickers coming through on a Wednesday.
No, but it is technically correct because,
well, that's semantics for you.
The Flames don't count. Steinberg Vickers along with you this hour on Flames Talk. Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. We're coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio this hour on Flames Talk, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
This is Flames Talk. Join the conversation at 960-960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Rolling on this lovely Wednesday. Steinberg Vickers, this hour of Flames Talk. You just got back from Edmonton.
Yeah.
Welcome home.
That is the worst short drive you'll ever do.
Hey, I was somewhere as well. We were both...
Yeah, we were both just sightseeing and
you were in the Europe,
worldly.
The Europe of Alberta. Edmonton, baby.
I don't know if that qualifies, but
you were at the 2024 Hlinka Gretzky Cup, all wrapped up from Edmonton. Canada beats Czechia 2-1 in the gold medal game. Sweden takes bronze. So we're going to spend the rest of the hour talking about the Hlinka Gretzky Cup and what we saw there. For those who aren't aware, and I'm not trying to speak in obvious statements here, but one thing, if you're not aware on the Hlinka Gretzky Cup, it's kind of the first real preview for the 2025 or the coming year's draft class. So the draft happens in late June, and then every year in August, the Hlinka Gretzky Cup is made up largely of draft eligible players for the coming year's draft, and is a really good first opportunity for a lot of these guys to be like, hey, this is the class of 2025. And obviously, Gavin McKenna is not eligible for 2025. He's a 2026 guy. He was on Team Canada. Like, the high-end guys will play in this tournament, you know, a couple years before their eligibility date if they're really good. But that's the extent of my knowledge on the Hlinka Gretzky Cup. I was not here. And not only was I not in the country, I wasn't, even if I was here, I wouldn't have been as dialed on it as you were, because you were there in Edmonton for the entire thing. Of course, Vickers is the gentleman in charge of FC hockey as well. Tell us about the Hlinka Gretzky Cup. What did we see? What were our observations kind of as a whole?
Canada absolutely dismantled everybody in this tournament. And you can look at, okay, well, they only won 2-1 against Czechia in the gold medal game. Well, Czechia scored with 7 seconds left and never, ever looked like Canada was in danger. Or Canada only beat Sweden 2-1 in the wrap-up in the preliminary game, which, by the way, is probably the best live hockey game I've seen in quite some time. Like, it had, these are 17-year-old players, some 16. This was played at an NHL pace. Like, it was just remarkable to see that game. But throughout the tournament, it was Canada, all Canada. And this is a best-on-best tournament. Team USA might gripe at that claim, but they do have the option of sending the National Team Development Program. They usually assemble high school kids, some from the CHL,
the
so
U.S.
on and so forth.
It's strange.
It's
so
weird.
There's,
yeah.
So there's kind of the two tournaments with similar age requirements. There's the Hlinka Gretzky Cup, and a few months prior, there's the World Under 18.
U18s in late April, yeah.
And Canada doesn't usually send their, well,
they can't with the CHL playoffs.
They never
going
send
on
their best possible team. You're right, because the CHL playoffs are going on, so a lot of the best players are playing for their club teams, whereas the Americans usually send their best team to that U18s, and it's kind of reversed. Canada sends their best to the Hlinka Gretzky Cup, and the Americans send a slightly different team. That's a
very fair statement. Team USA was
something to this conversation.
You know, top U.S. or top U.S. high school players, some that'll play in the USHL, but not with the National Team Development Program. But this Team Canada, and it's going to sound silly to say, but it reminded me of the 2014 Team Canada at the Olympics, where they didn't give their opponent anything. When they did, it was Carey Price shutting the door on a grade A chance, and then they just found a way to go. It reminded me so much of that on a draft eligible or a junior level, where Canada was never in any trouble whatsoever throughout this tournament, and credit to them for taking the gold medal. That's sort of the look from the tournament. Czechia, let's give a shout out to Czechia, though, because this is the second straight year they finished silver. They aren't happy finishing behind Canada in second place, but that's back-to-back silver medals at the Hlinka. They just won the world championship. Like, they've been dipping for quite some time, and they're certainly rebounding in terms of what their program is. So tip of the cap to Czechia as well.
Let's dive in on the class of 2025, kind of an early preview. Before we do that, though, and the reason we're doing this and spending more time on it is because, look, I mean, I think a lot of people believe the Flames have an opportunity to be getting themselves a pretty high pick in 2025. That's why they play the games. We don't know how this season's going to go, but a lot of projections have the Flames being a little further down in the standings this year, and I think a lot of Flames fans are hoping for a couple of high picks in the 25 and 26 draft class. Before 2025, Let's talk about the projected number one overall pick in 2026. Gavin McKenna of the Medicine Hat Tigers represented Canada 6 points in five games. What did we see from the likely first overall pick in a couple of years?
I've never seen a guy generate so much and come away with so little. And I say that kind of like he still had 6 points in five games. But McKenna at the U18s in April had, what, like 20 points or 21 points in seven games, like played at almost a three-point-per-game clip. And the record at the Hlinka in a single tournament is 13, shared by five players, most recently done by Matvei Michkov. So coming into the tournament, I'm like, that's going to be a record that's going to fall. Gavin McKenna is going to be the single tournament point leader of all time at this event. And it didn't happen. And I think it's the first time I've ever seen Gavin McKenna look a little frustrated on the ice. He was visibly frustrated with not finishing. You create something and it gives you a lot of momentum, but it doesn't give you a lot of goals, assists, points.
And he still ended up point per game.
And he still ended up at over a point per game. So I think only one other player, might have been Novotny from the Czechs, who's also a fellow 2026 draft eligible. I think he was the only one that generated more shot attempts than Gavin McKenna in this tournament. So it was really interesting to see. And it was almost kind of polarizing, and you almost saw McKenna try to do too much. He did a couple things on the ice that if I were a coach, I wouldn't have loved. Like he was stick handling like millimeters inside the blue line, and routinely it would just get poked off his stick and away the other team would go. But it still isn't going to take anything away from the fact that Gavin McKenna was electric at the tournament, and whether or not the points reflected it, you can still look at the game tape and go, yeah, how did this guy not come away with 12 or 15 points from this tournament?
So I'm just going to fire you, rapid fire, some of the guys that I know that you wanted to talk about and that really stood out to you. So let's start, and this is now into guys who are eligible for next year's draft in 2025. Matthew Schaefer for Team Canada was the first name on your list of guys that really stood out.
First time I saw him, I didn't check out any video. He's from the Ontario Hockey League. I saw him at Canada's camp and it was like, okay, this tournament, it was like, I don't know what swear words I'm allowed to use, but holy, he was just the most dominant player in the tournament. It wasn't even close. And he's a defenseman. And the way he could command the game in all three zones, he's also Canada's captain. So sprinkle in some leadership, sprinkle in the fact that he is what, about a dozen days shy of being eligible for 2026. He's one of the youngest players in the 2025 draft class. And he is just, I put him ahead of every single defenseman from the 2024 class. No disrespect to Zane Parekh, to Artem Levshinov, so on and so forth. If the draft were today and I have the ability to select from 2024, I'm taking Schaefer over every single defenseman. He was that good. He can absolutely kill anything in the defensive zone and has the speed, the vision, the hands to create offensively. He was just far and away for me the best player in the tournament, bar none. The only other one that could come close that we'll talk to in a second is Adam Beinok from Czechia, who is a really impressive forward. Like he would be the close-ish second if we're going to even name a close, because I think the gap is too big.
Okay.
But Matthew Schaefer was just absolutely phenomenal. And he probably went from a guy that's like, okay, well, maybe he could be a top 10 or a top 12 pick to this guy, if he continues to play like he did at the Hlinka, he's
top five territory.
I would go top three.
Okay.
And I don't think there's a defenseman in the class that's going to touch him if he continues to do what. Okay. And let's put the little caveat on. Let's slam the brakes. We're still 10 months away from the draft. We still have a full season of hockey to play. Mm-hmm. But that's what makes the Hlinka so interesting and so exciting, is it is the first showcase for some of these players. The 2007 class, 2006s are too old to play. But it gets you excited about certain players. So if you had a great showcase, right on. If you had a poor showcase, you still got all sorts of runway to correct. We're still only talking about a five-game sample. But Matthew Schaefer, so good.
Tell us about Beinok, yeah.
Oh, 5'7", like 157 pounds. But he is just, he competes. He has the hands. He has the speed. His legs are tiny. And he can still blow by about 98% of the defensemen in this tournament. And was just like, he played in the tournament last year and shredded it as a 16-year-old. Shredded it this year. He is now the all-time points lead with 20, I believe he's up to, or maybe 21. And now this factors in last year's tournament as well. So he's got
at the Helsinki.
Yeah, this isn't a single tournament that he holds the record for.
10 points in five games last year, 11 points in five games.
So 21, he was just, every time he touched the puck, you're like, oh, something's going to happen. But he wasn't just an offensive guy. He was out there killing penalties. He was surprisingly physical. I don't want to say he low-bridged somebody behind the net in the offensive zone coming around, because he's only 5'7". Every hit's going to be kind of lower. But he was not shy at all in doing that. The problem is he's 5'7". And his dad grew to 5'9", so there's some hope. But he's going to be one of the most polarizing prospects in the 2025 class, because if he was even 5'10", he's probably garnering consideration as a top five, at worst, a top 10 pick.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be a lot of caution and a lot of, you know, well, he's only this size. And so he's going to be, it's too early to call him a projected faller in the draft, but I'm going to be so curious as to if whether or not there's a team, again, got to continue this out through the season, but if there's a team that saw enough at the Hlinka, and there's certainly enough to be like, I don't care how big he is, he's got to go. Now, the flip side is, I think there's only, this is according to NHL.com heights and weights, so take that as you will, but I think since 05, there's only seven players 5'7 or smaller to play more than 200 games in the NHL.
Okay.
And none of them were a first round pick.
Who's the top goalie in the class of 2025?
Jack Ivankovic. He was Canada's goalie. He allowed 4 goals in 5 games. Again, Czechia scored with 7 seconds left, so he was 7 seconds away from having 2 shutouts in 4 starts.
Very Carey Price.
He's 5'11". And he's still going to be, at least from the early onset, the number one goalie in the class. Everything he does is just calm, poised, patient. I talked to him a couple times over the course of the tournament, and I hope I didn't offend him when I said this, but I'm like, man, you make goaltending look so boring. Like, it's not, you're not an exciting goalie to watch, because all he does is set and forget, gets to his spot, calm snap of the puck out of the air, or, oh, second chance. There were probably like 5 rebounds he actually had to make the second save on, because it was just, everything was so clean, everything was so tidy. And I guess awesome optimism here as well. His dad ended up growing to 6'5", but he's only 5'11". He was always one of the biggest goalies growing up, so he kind of plateaued in his growth spurt. But his dad's 6'5", his mom's 5'7", so maybe there's a little bit of, I don't even know what the word is. I'm not able to track and chart, okay, you hit a growth spurt and stopped.
Right.
You don't grow again for 2 years and then you hit another one. I don't know if that's a thing. I'm not well-versed in that, but there's optimism. He's still got room to grow. But again, we're talking about a goalie, and the city will resonate with it. An undersized goalie who has all the potential in the world.
Why was Canada's Jake O'Brien someone that really jumped off the page to you?
He does everything really well. And he needs, we put him on our list of players who impressed. And then we went and looked up his stats to write the article. He had 0 points. He didn't register even an assist in the tournament. And there were 2 of us, well, technically 3 FC scouts at the Hlinka. 2 of us were there every single day, every single game. And we both had to put him on our list of top performers from the tournament. And then all of a sudden, no points. He was just able to dictate play again in all 3 zones as a forward. Really strong instincts as a center. He can play make. I want to say he can finish. Clearly, he didn't have any points in the tournament, but everything pointed to, he was another one that must have just been absolutely frustrated, like McKenna.
He was a point-per-game guy in the OHL last year,
If I'm not mistaken, he was the OHL Rookie of the Year as well. I might be mistaken on that, but I feel like that might be accurate. Just everything about his game screams, he's going to be a pro player. He's going to be a player in the NHL.
Yeah, he was.
There's no,
by the way.
Thank you. Correct. There's no doubt in my mind he's going to be an NHLer. It's just a matter of where he kind of slots in. But he had such a strong tournament for me that, like, you couldn't not name him one of the top performers, regardless of the stat line. And to be honest, there isn't an NHL team at the Hlinka. And I'm pretty sure there was at least 5 members of all 32 teams there. Oh, yeah. It's a massive scouting event. Not one of them cares whether or not he had 1 point or 10 points. They came away impressed with what he does.
Okay, few other names. Just hit us with a few others that stood out, good or bad for you.
Radim Mertka stood out amazingly. One of the things I like about going to or scouting a tournament like this is I don't do a lot of next year looks and views. So Mertka, I had no idea who he was. Didn't know whether or not he was a projected first rounder, projected seventh rounder, or wasn't going to get drafted. He's 6'6" and probably played, if I had to ballpark it, 25 to 30 minutes a night for Czechia. Plays power play, plays penalty kill. Really deceivingly good hands. Excellent shutdown defender, physical. And it doesn't look, I say this respectfully, it doesn't look like he can skate. And he's so fast. Like, he is so lanky and the mechanics maybe aren't quite there. But I believe it was McKenna going at him one-on-one. Like, they were almost in a foot race for a puck. And I'm like, oh, now we're going to find out if he can. Didn't lose an inch of ice racing McKenna for a puck. And part of it is because, well, he's 6'6". His legs are so long that he only has to take one stride for McKenna's two. But it was just, there wasn't something Mertka couldn't do. And he's 6'6". Oh, and a right shot defenseman. So he's got all the pieces there. Caleb Desnoyers was another one for Canada. He is somewhere between Elias Lindholm and Patrice Bergeron. But if they were just miserable, like more miserable to play against, not from a frustration standpoint, from a, I'm going to run you through the boards, or I'm going to slash you in the back of the legs, or I'm going to be a little jerk. And that's clearly that's not where he is now. He's not somewhere between there. And that's where he can get to. He's going to be a player that many teams covet because he's going to look like a 200-foot top line center with edge who can score, who can set up, who can defend, who can penalty kill, who can power play. If you want him to play a depth role and shut down an opposing forward, he can do that. He gets his touches so many different elements of the game. Those were sort of the two, Mertka and Desnoyers. And Desnoyers, probably a top 10 pick, at worst, top 15. Again, as it stands right now.
Right.
Mertka, I have no idea. He could go top 10. He could go 33rd overall. He might have to wait to day two. Both of these players were just so interesting to me coming out of the tournament.
So finally, and look, not everybody in the 2025 draft class played at the Hlinka Gretzky Cup, and not every top prospect was there. But it's a pretty good first scouting opportunity where everybody is playing best on best and playing high level hockey. It's a really good opportunity to get some eyes on these guys for all 32 NHL teams. We always talk about it being a strong draft class or a weak draft class, right? Like 2023 was the generational class. 2024 was the weak class, right? How's 2025 shaping up to kind of wrap up our conversation?
So I don't know if this is coming from a sort of slant of bias, but having just been there and knowing that probably five of the top seven-ish players ranked as it stands right now weren't there because they were either at the World Junior Summer Showcase in Plymouth with the national teams there, the U20 teams, or they're just too old to participate in this tournament. But I am really excited about this draft class. Again, maybe a little slightly biased having seen, like we kind of penciled out the potential for 17 or 18 of the players at the Hlinka being first rounders in the 2025 draft. Like there was a lot of quality talent there. So I'm really optimistic. It's not a bad year to have two or three multiple first round picks.
Like the
Calgary Flames, because there are a lot of intriguing prospects that will be available that just played so well, that showed well, and have set the stage for their draft season. Curious to see how the next sort of 9-10 months unfold.
Feels like it was a pretty worthwhile trip up to Edmonton for you. Hey?
I mean, if you got to go to Edmonton, you might as well catch three games a day for 5 days and then come home.
Did you see every single game?
No, because over the course of the preliminary round, so 3 days, one of the games started an hour after the other on the Edmonton community rink.
Logistically,
they were in the same building, but you just can't be two places at once.
You saw every Canada game.
Saw every Canada game.
Yeah.
Because Canada played in the main rink every single day. Didn't miss much, I feel like, by missing out on some German games, some Swiss games, and some Finnish games.
That was a tough week for the Finns.
Oh, it's a tough week for people that had to watch the Finns.
Really?
They just had this natural ability to not be good.
Okay.
then also make their opponent not very good.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's really...
And everything I said about that Canada-Sweden game in the preliminary round was the exact opposite for every Finn game.
I like that. That's a... That's a real good in-depth kind of teaser for the 2025 draft.
And amuse-bouche.
I like that. I like an amuse-bouche to get you started. And you know what? It's going to be something that we are tracking all year long because, hey, it's a really important 2025 draft for the Calgary Flames as well. Thanks to Vix. He's on Twitter at AA Vickers. Check out FC Hockey as well at NHLEntryDraft.com. See? Never forget that for the rest of my life. That'll wrap us up on the Sports Drive today. Thanks to Shannon Cam, our producers as well. Sports Drive brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Save 40% on a Halo Smart Lock and start unlocking your house right from your phone. Visit CalgaryLockandSafe.com.